I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Carla Dotson. Carla is a restaurateur and entrepreneur operating in East Waco under the name Boardwalk on Elm. We talk about developments along the Elm Avenue corridor, her recent conversation with Representative Pete Sessions, and ways that the community in East Waco is interacting more closely with Baylor University. Welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm glad to be here. It's been an exciting 2021.
It absolutely has been, yes. Particularly for this Elm Avenue corridor where you both have your business and where you live. So give our listeners a little bit of an idea of who you are, how you ended up in East Waco, and what you're about.
I'm native Wacoan, spent a couple of years in the Air Force. I have a family and friends, moved back to my grandmother's neighborhood, which is the East Waco. My dad is from South Waco here. Decided to build a home there and worked for a VA for a couple of years. And so I went back to school, got my master's degree. And so I started to dabble into entrepreneurship and never had a food truck or never had any specialized training. However, OJT is the best besides having the piece of paper. But I bought a house there and also, you know, with the growth of Baylor University, some of the leadership back in 2011 or so, there was conversations about, you know, how Baylor was growing and how they were crossing the river, the new stadium and mm-hmm. such. So we were encouraged to buy some of the properties and stuff there in East Waco. So that's what I did.
So this was a community effort of the Black community in East Waco to say, hey, Baylor is starting to come on the other side of the river. Let's make sure that we have a piece of this.
Yes, and our neighborhood is a collective group of people. We have Black, brown, white, you know, so it's a collective group because the people that came out, you know, when we did have those conversations about, you know, and we were asking Baylor about, you know, some transparencies. Hey, are you guys moving in the neighborhood? But which, you know, we had long conversations about that. So it looks like, not deja vu, but as Waco grows, it takes you back to what the conversations were before, you know. But we're talking about, we were worried about where we're going to have to move or, you know, how some things happened before when Mr. Austin was still alive and Mr. Gibson, when they were in leadership roles there, they talked to us about some gentrification. So it sticks with people when you have people that have lived through certain processes. So they talked about South Waco and how, you know, their mom's home or whatever it is there was not there anymore because of how the university grew. So that was a concern of ours. So in that process, I met a bunch of my neighbors, Ms. Juanika Muhammad and some other ones, because my mom lives there back in the neighborhood next door to me. And my sister lives in the neighborhood, so we have cousins and friends. So everybody's kind of connected in some type of way. So it was important to get those people aware about what was happening to the neighborhood, which fast forwarding it to now, you know, I bought the property and put a little food truck on there, but we didn't open up right away. We just kind of had the idea. So I didn't have an idea that I wanted to do food or to even start a business until I looked across the street. I worked at the VA, and so we started seeing them working on the silos. I'm like, okay, so everything was desolate and nothing was moving there, you know. Where backyard was, there was an old little club there, you know, had been there for years, and I think it's City Lights or something like that. But it wasn't vibrant like it is now. So we just watched them grow, and I was like, well, maybe I should get ahead of the development. And in the process, started to remember some of the foods because I'm not a chef. I'm an entrepreneur, but I mean, you can find your niche in anything, I guess. Once you put your mind to it. So I think that's where we just remember some of the flavors from childhood. And so we went on and tried to duplicate some of that because Lee's was still open then. And that's a spot that we went to every Friday. So that's about it.
So you had roots in East Waco. You spent a lot of time there. You're living there. You have an entrepreneurial bug, but you don't have any restaurant experience. You're not a food person. What was it that made you want to start Boardwalk on Elm rather than starting another entrepreneurial venture in the area?
I felt because food is universal for people. I mean, sometimes you can pick certain things. Maybe people don't like it, but, you know, it never hurts to try. And I've traveled enough where I know I'm like, ew, I might not like that. But you try it anyway because it's food. So I just decided to go in that direction of food because I'm not a fashionista or any of that. So I'm not really into a clothing industry. I've dabbled in that a little bit, but it changes too much for me. So
Marilyn Banks has that corner covered.
She
on
has
Elm Avenue.
That.
Go check out Miss Marilyn's Gift Gallery there on Elm Avenue, very close to where your first setup is for Boardwalk on Elm. And you actually just opened up a second location at what's called Chowtown there in University Parks and Franklin downtown. What did you learn from the first experience on Elm that has made things a bit easier for you over on the south side of the river, I guess, west side of the river?
Well, I think that as you grow, and we went through COVID, so there was a lot of bumpy areas in there, but people started to find you because people were looking for food. So as I just reinvested into Boardwalk, we decided to go. We had the truck already before, but it's like, you know, you got to have the funds and some other stuff. But once the bank kind of came along, some things kind of fell in place.
This is the TFNB Bank on Elm Avenue.
So they have been instrumental. So talk to them about, hey, can we see about getting this other food truck up and going? So they took a chance with us, you know, like they do with a lot of businesses around Waco. I'm understanding, you know, they've invested or put money behind certain things and they take off. So when they did that, we had the truck outfitted and, you know, got it all fancy and brought it back here to Waco. And we were mobile, more mobile. So we caught the wave of Baylor University through Quavis Peacock. He helped. He was instrumental in merging that together because there was conversations about lack of small businesses in the areas that don't get to be on the campus as much. So we had that opportunity to be there. So got to see the students and actually see the campus. I mean, even if you live here, if you hadn't gone on campus, you know, so it's a big place. So they have a cool fountain. So, but the idea to go over, I had met Miss Lisa Shelton and Miss Ashley and had a conversation with them. They're like, okay, cool, great. And I just decided, well, we can put the other truck there and serve some of the flavors that we have on Elm Street over on University Park. So I'm also looking into vending machines also. So hopefully I'll be able to, I have vending machines now, but hopefully I'll be able to put them there and they'll complement what we do with the food. So
it's so important to have a grease guy, someone who can function as an intermediary at the city level. That's largely what City Center Waco is tasked to do, mm-hmm. or to be this intercessor between community voices and the city folks who are sitting up in the offices. But Quavis, he's been a guest here on Downtown Depot before. He's the Assistant Director of Community Relations and Cultural Wealth at Baylor. Yes. And he was really brought on to Baylor recognizing, hey, there is major talent in the African-American community in Waco. We want to be more integrated with it. It's hard for someone at Baylor necessarily go find everyone in the community, but having someone like Quavis to grease those relationships is really important. And I think that there's I sense this from like my parents and older generations, mm-hmm. where there's a maybe a hesitation to titles like that, like Director of Cultural Wealth or whatever it might be. Just like wondering, what is this abstraction, kind of like modern stuff that you're putting in my face? But when you get to see tangible examples of how having someone whose focus is being with one foot in Baylor and one foot in the community in Waco, you see all these benefits that come from it.
Right. And I think all of those things are still new, in my own opinion, because with City Center, you know, everything is new and everything that has been touched has been fairly new as far as like development and getting everybody on board for certain things, because there are a lot of people that are hesitant. There are a lot of people asking questions, a lot of people concerned about, you know, how this looks later, you know. So we're still in the, and as you know, being part of Elm Street and it's historic, and when you invest in some areas like that, it comes with, you know, a lot of growth. We haven't seen it go as fast. I think the Bridge Street project has been, it's going to be instrumental. The condos and some other stuff that pops up there, you know, they're going to be great to help supplement. But I think like bringing people on board as far as like what does that become later? What do we create on Elm to complement, you know, even say downtown, because, you know, there's a lot of focus on downtown and growing downtown and the Magnolia, you know, but I don't see a lot of tourist people. I do see some, but not a lot that come our way. You know, they're on the Blue Ducks or something like that, or they're driving past kind of just checking out stuff. But most of those people are from out of town. I don't see a lot of, you know, some of the local people that come. I mean, I have neighborhood people that support us or whatever. So like I said, once we crossed the river or got outside of the, you know, Elm corridor, it's people like, oh, okay, we didn't know y'all were there. So like I said, I think it's a plus. I don't think that it'll hurt us in any way, especially they have apartments that they're putting down there. I mean, there's a lot of growth on both sides, you know. So
my hope is that even if tourists totally pass by Elm Avenue, that's fine with me, because I would love for Elm Avenue to really be the cultural hub of Waco and of Wacoans, right? Mm-hmm. There's so much great history in the area. Mm-hmm. I think that largely from a development perspective, it's a chicken and egg situation where people don't want to put money in because they don't see enough people there, but there's not enough people there because people haven't put enough money in.
Right.
And then, you know, the city is doing some massive streetscape improvements on that Elm Avenue corridor, which are going to be beautiful if and when they are finished. And so that's another issue with, hey, I want to bring in tenants to my building, but I can't tell you exactly when your sidewalks are going to be torn up. And it makes it really hard on small business owners, particularly coming out of COVID, thinking, I have a limited cash drawer.
Yes.
How am I going to deploy this? And
mm-hmm.
you decided that rather than investing more on Elm Avenue, you were going to diversify a little bit and hop on the other side of the river.
Right. Yeah. I think with the mobile truck, I mean, like this past weekend, Saturday, we were in Hillsboro. So they had an event there. But we have been Marlin, Hillsboro. We have been in some surrounding areas. So it's great to be mobile. I think mobile businesses, whether it's food or whatever, you can kind of take your product somewhere, you know, online or whatever, but having a mobile business has helped, especially when you get slow in one area. You know, a lot of people ask me, oh, Carla, are y'all going into a brick and mortar? Well, I am working on some stuff. Some stuff is in the works because I do have several properties that I did purchase. And I just been thinking about, you know, what does that look like if I want to go into brick and mortar? Do I want to stay kind of small still? Because I don't think that, well, I feel like, because I have been in a small space, I don't need this huge space. You know, I think you can achieve what you need to achieve. You know, some people are like, oh, yeah, I need about 3,000 square feet. No, because I've been to some restaurants here lately, you know, going back to some restaurants. It's kind of skimpy in there. Now you kind of see, you know, where those chairs are not filled. So it's like, no, don't create that space. Or I've been to Austin where they do a lot of the cloud kitchens and DoorDash and waiter and Grubhub stuff. So people are using a smaller space to do whatever they need to do. You know, some of the chefs, I guess, are doing those cloud kitchens. So like I said, we'll see if I do brick and mortar, if I go ahead and, well, I probably still need to have brick and mortar because I still have food trucks, but I'll still need that commissary area. But I just think that, you know, as I go over time, you know, the next couple of years, I'll see how, you know, Waco looks. I just can't just focus on Elm because Waco is growing itself. So we'll see.
At the end of the day, the only unforgivable sin is running out of money.
Yeah.
If you have enough money, you can make even the silliest business idea work. And the fact of the matter is that a lot more people can afford $1,000 a month rent in a small space than who can afford a $5,000 a month rent in a large space. Mm-hmm. And I think that the onus is on developers, people who are creating restaurants or building new storefronts, to realize we're in a different world now. A lot of these businesses do have mobile components, or they do have an e-commerce side, and you don't need 3,000 square feet for your clothing store. You would much rather have micro spaces mm-hmm. where, as a shopper, you can show up and you can interact with 10 different brands rather than one big one. I think that has been a big change that consumers recognize and that development just simply hasn't caught up to.
Yeah, I agree with that, because if you think about when you go on vacation or something, I'm just thinking of some of the spots that everybody's piled in the smallest space, or we gather at the smallest space to shop or whatever it is, because it kind of hurts the malls and some other stuff, I guess, if it's a larger area. But I just think that, you know, going forward, I will definitely be looking at my business model. I'll be looking at, you know, where I go next, and then how can I support other small businesses, you know, whether they have whatever. I just want to make sure that I do create some space, you know.
Carla Dotson is the owner of Boardwalk on Elm, a food truck there on Elm Avenue, and also another truck that is on University Parks in Franklin. You can catch her downtown almost any day. We're working hard over there. In recent history of Elm Avenue, say the last couple of years, there had been a building that had been used by the community. It had been given by a guy named Tom Salome, and it had been used as Train Waco, across a CrossFit box, and now has been purchased by TFNB, which has created a bank there. But there were a lot of concerns in the community about that building, folks in the community who felt like we, in fact, as the community, should own this building and it shouldn't be for sale. That's leading us to a larger question about gentrification. But one, what has the impact been of TFNB being there for folks in the community? And secondly, a lot of the fears about gentrification that were surfacing in 2019 about TFNB being there specifically, have you seen those fears come to fruition? Were they maybe overblown? Are we still not prepared for the gentrification that's coming? Where do you kind of sit on this whole topic now?
That building, I've been in there many times. It's been a meeting place and some other stuff. I think that a lot of stuff got convoluted. You know, you can hear rumors here and there, you know, from the left and right. But that building was a special building. I know a lot of people worked out of that building. I think that the shock when it was sold and some things started to transform, you know, it was like, wait a minute now, what's going on? You know what I'm saying? When I think it was more shock, too, that some type of change came to Elm Street, you know, because we hadn't seen much happen over there. And then for it to be a gym, and then people started to get concerned about, okay, well, does this mean that I have to move out of the neighborhood, or how does this change the neighborhood? Which I didn't see a lot of change. I didn't see a lot of movement where people were having to move. I just think that, you know, you just saw a different element there, that, you know, somebody was running a business, a gym or whatever. But I just think that right now, you know, because like I said, you know, a lot of people have purchased different stuff on Elm. We're just waiting to see what comes next. What does everybody bring to Elm, the Elm corridor? But how does it also service the community? When you talk about gentrification, I think for me, in my opinions, I have some mixed concerns. I don't think that if I want to be gentrified, the era we live in now, if you want to be gentrified, I mean, you know, you give up or you give in to whatever it is. I mean, gentrification is a change. But, you know, if you don't want to change, you don't have to. You know, you just have to keep up with what's going on and be aware about change and development. So with that being said, when we noticed that the stadium was coming and some other stuff, we just adapted. Hey, we got higher taxes. We got to keep our lawns maintained. It was just, you have to step up to what is happening and keep up with that change. However, you also have to keep in touch with leadership and city officials and get to know them also and let them know, hey, we're still here. We still pay taxes. We still want to be a part of the neighborhood. We don't want to see some major change that uproots us out of the neighborhood, you know, unless you decide to sell or whatever it is. So I think with the changes on Elm or in East Waco, as it goes, I think the more awareness, the more city officials or city leadership puts more information out and say, hey, look, we're going to be working on these streets, putting another water line. Okay, well, what are these water lines going? Are y'all putting in a new hotel? Are you putting in a new apartment complex or whatever there? Then the community can be more aware. Hey, look, we're going to have new neighbors. So how do you make those adjustments? You just make sure that you take care of what you need to take care of. And when it's time for your time, if you want to leave, then you know, you should have that option. So
you recently got to have a conversation with Representative Pete Sessions.
Yes.
Talking about East Waco, Waco in general. What were the contents of y'all's talk?
There were about 14 of us. There was some ministry leadership there. There was, of course, the small business owners of all restaurants, trucking, ownerships of different types of businesses. And our conversation was that I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. He wanted to meet with small businesses here, and they have an article on his website there talking about some of the changes that are coming down the pipeline, you know, that would affect East Waco. You know, we still have a lot of open spaces there. I don't know what that meant or whatever, but as far as, like, growth and some other stuff, we talked about some businesses that are coming and how that impacts how we get more people back working. You know, they talked about Guama and some other programs. But, you know, my input was, you know, hey, if we're looking at tapping into the workforce and the Workforce Commission and tapping into the temp agencies and get people retrained, you know, maybe they were a cook before and they want to be a forklift driver. How do we get those people in contact with who they need to be in contact with? I think they're doing some kind of upskill program and some stuff like that that should be instrumental if people go ahead and sign up. But sometimes that information has to get out there. Sometimes it's put out there, but it's not emphasized. Hey, look, you may want to, you know, it just doesn't fall down the line like it should. So, you know, I'm just hoping that information gets out there. So we need a lot of those people back to work. You know, we have a lot of people that move here and that's cool, you know, and they've been trained and some other stuff, but we have a lot of people that still need to protect their livelihood, especially when you're talking about cost of living and some other stuff that would change, you know, that puts a lot of people out. So, but that was our conversation. It was a pretty good conversation and we're hoping to have more, and it was orchestrated by TIF and B Bank. So,
when I had Dr. Tyra Lindsey Warren on here a few months ago, she was talking about this idea of virtue signaling, where it looks to all the people you're having conversations with or the community like you really care. But at the end of the day, you can look at the ledger and see, okay, well, how did you actually spend your money? So let's hope for Representative Pete Sessions and all our leaders in Waco that we are not just signaling our virtue, but we are, in fact, building that virtue.
Absolutely.
And really connecting with our communities. What you had mentioned earlier about Upskill, that is a program that's been a major initiative of Mayor Dylan Meek. I encourage everyone visit upskill-waco.org. That is a collaboration to build McLennan County's capacity to provide equitable workforce training pathways. And we have such a need for a lot of these essential services. Like, if you're trying to develop right now, it's hard to find construction workers. Right. It's hard to find plumbers. And if you are someone who's been a cook, you're not that far away from making a six-figure income if you can learn how to plumb.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's what we kind of had the conversations on. And I'm glad you say that because, like I said, you know, when you're invited to stuff like that and, you know, sometimes you have to put politics to the side. And like you said, you know, so you make sure it's not a mirror like we're just doing it for fluff. But, you know, actually, you know, if you're going to come here for a reason, to make sure that reason happens or make sure that information gets downstream, you know, to everybody, you know. And so, yeah, you're correct. I think that they just need to tap into the community more. I don't know whether it's through social media or just actually grabbing some of the people from down in the community, because sometimes we pick some of the same people to be a voice on some stuff. And so some people feel like, oh, well, they just pick them and they don't pick us. So they tend not to migrate to what you're saying, because not because they don't like it, but it's just because they're not connected. The networking is not as great. I mean, I'm grateful that I feel like I'm a regular person or whatever, but my networking has been great. I'm okay to start meeting new people and crossing different things that I hadn't crossed before. You know, it's okay, you know.
Well, and if you show up at a meeting and it's only the old heads, you feel a little bit left out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so important for folks to see people who look like them, whether it's your skin color or it's your age or it's your sexual preference.
Right.
Feeling included
is
really important, and particularly when we're trying to source public opinion on, should the sidewalk be 8 feet or 10 feet? Should we plant trees here? It really is important to make sure you're digging into the community. And simply making a post on Facebook, hey, we're having a meeting here today. It's clear that that's just not enough. There needs to be another level of engagement, a deeper layer of engagement, which is why there's folks like Cuevas at Baylor or Michael Carpenter at City Center Waco. It does seem, from my vantage point looking on Elm, and I do agree that the development has been a bit slower than I thought it was going to be.
Right.
And when we were talking about this a few years ago, it seemed like everything's happening now. You got to go do it today.
Right.
It's clear that these things take a long time. But what I love seeing about Elm Avenue is this incremental development. It's people taking small swings and trying to make it work. And it's what works for your pocketbook. What we've seen with the opening of Hilliard's Barbecue there close to you.
Right.
This amazing farmer's market that has now come to East Waco. The East Waco Farmer's Market's on Elm Avenue and Dallas Street. It's going to be open till October on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays from 9 until 1.
Yes.
That, to me, is the kind of development that Elm Avenue should be seeking. And I hope that our city leaders are incentivizing, and I hope that the public itself comes and meets these business owners, entrepreneurs, where they are, because that's going to be the backbone of the community, is supporting the others.
Right, right. Because you look at what happened with downtown, you know, and they did a great job with the farmer's market, even though they've had to move locations a couple of times. But it's grown. It's big. People come, you know, but they're getting some legs there. I mean, people are showing up, and Miss Kay Bell and some other people that put that stuff together, you know, they're doing an awesome job, you know, making that happen, especially there on the corner. You know, you can stop, and it's this walkable space, and people can kind of look and see what's going on. But like I said, you know, they still, they have me blocked with the construction, and they're like, oh, Carla, it'll be till September. But that's going to come back that end, on that end, and they're going to do work, and that's going to be a long process also, you know. So, but long as they keep it going, because like I said, hopefully soon, you know, my space will be renovated, and it'll be great, and you know, if they can't be there, then hopefully they can be somewhere near. You know, we're getting some sidewalks now, so. So.
Carla Dotson is the owner of Boardwalk on Elm. If folks want to find you or find your food truck, how can they do that?
We are located on the Boardwalk on Elm. I'm at 904 Elm, and then the address on University of Chowtown is 202. Sometimes we're in and out because it is a mobile food truck, but we have been trying to be there consistently, at least Tuesday through Friday. Right now I have some summer hours from 11 to 3. I'm usually open from 11 to 6:30 until we get some more construction done and, you know, whatnot. But we will be there. But you look us up on Instagram or Facebook, we're good. We're there.
Thank you so much, Carla.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks again to Carla Dotson. Be sure to check out Boardwalk on Elm as you're downtown this week. And if you want to know what's happening in between episodes of Downtown Depot, follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Waco Business News. I love sharing stories about the civic leaders, engaged citizens, and small business owners who are sparking Waco's revitalization. I'm your host, Austin Meek, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.